Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Concert ever in the history of pop music. The Beatles are here.
When disc jockey Murray the K introduced the Beatles on August 15th, 1965, he wasn't kidding. It was a big concert. But it wouldn't be the last. Today, a look back at 40 years of music history at Shea Stadium. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up on the show later, it's a revolution remixed. Find out about an overhaul of Stravinsky's groundbreaking work, The Rite of Spring. But we begin with the Beatles playing Shea Stadium. They set all kinds of records for attendance, the amount of money they grossed, the number of screaming girls assembled in one place. It was the very first arena rock concert, and over the next 40 years, Shea would host just a handful of shows, some of them historic. Tonight, Billy Joel is set to play the first of two shows that will end the ballpark's place in music history. In a moment, we'll ask to hear your music memories, and we'll also hear from Jim Farber of the New York Daily News, music critic, about a couple of major shows at the ballpark. But first, joining us to talk about Shea Stadium, here in our studio is New York Sun reporter Nicholas Wapshot. Nicholas, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So why is it, I mean, Billy Joel has been dealt a singular honor, right?
Yes, he has.
Why is it such an honor to play Shea?
Because it was, as was Murray the K said, I mean, it was the beginning of something really big. And it was the beginning for Billy Joel, anyway, of the introduction to his life of the notion that actually you could be a singer-songwriter with a garage band and you could make something of your life. And it turned out pretty well for Billy Joel.
So you're talking about the fact that Billy Joel, as a young, aspiring musician, was aware of that early Beatles concert, and that whole thing was a big formative experience for him.
Yeah, as we know, he came from Levittown, and there he was on Long Island, you know, thinking...
Please, Long Island.
Long Island. And was someone who was just mucking around with his pals, and when he heard the Beatles, and he heard the Beatles coming to America, that's when most Americans first heard of the Beatles, after all, when they first came, he said, actually, he couldn't bear soul. Soul was the big thing at the time, and, you know, he was wrong for all sorts of reasons. He couldn't play soul.
Well, but as he has also said, you know, I'm a white boy from Long Island, what do I know about soul? So at least he knew his limit,
I guess. He did, yeah, but I think the Beatles opened up a new world to him. And it actually opened up a new world, of course, for every singer-songwriter. Until then, you know, it was the Brill Building. It was Tin Pan Alley. There were singers and musicians, and there were people who wrote songs for them, and they lasted 2.5 minutes. And everybody knew what the form was, and after the Beatles, you could write your own songs and sing your own songs and record them exactly as you wanted, and then the recording, the definitive recording, became the thing, and you didn't have to perform it live in different ways.
And in the case of the Beatles at Shea Stadium, who would have known if you did perform it in a different way? There was nothing to be heard above the din of the crowd. Let's bring in Jim Farber from the New York Daily News. He's joining us on the phone. And Jim, why is Billy Joel the man to sort of put the period at the end of this 40-year-long sentence at Shea Stadium?
Well, he's a local boy. You know, he writes all about, you know, the New York area, from the suburbs to the, you know, to the city, obviously. So, I mean, he's identified with New York. You know, he's played Yankee Stadium before, so he'll be one of the few, if not the only, to play both stadiums. I'm not sure about that one. He may be the only one to do both stadiums. And he also has the right sort of, you know, pugnacious character, you know, combative character for, you know, what's basically a sporting arena.
But he hasn't released an album of original pop songs in 15 years.
Yeah, but he's hugely pop. You also have to think about, you know, it's a handful of people that could fill that place and, you know, sell it out twice. So, you know, so that's the other thing. I mean, he remains really popular. Those songs are, you know, I suppose modern pop standards in a way, at least in terms of their exposure and their popularity.
All right, so, Nicholas, let's go back to the Beatles at Shea, where this all began. Billy Joel is ending it tonight and Friday night with two concerts at Shea Stadium. It began with two concerts by the Beatles, one in 65, one in 66. Why was it important, not just for Shea Stadium, why was that important for the Beatles, those concerts?
I'm not sure that it was actually very important for the Beatles. The important thing for the Beatles was the fact they came here and they took, you know, the first six slots in the top ten and were an instant success, and there was huge demand. It was very important, however, for Brian Epstein, their manager, because he suddenly discovered this sort of demand beyond belief. I mean, more people wanting to touch and hear the Beatles than they could possibly manage. And he was the person who said, why don't we go to Madison Square Garden? They said, well, it only contains so many people. This is the old Madison Square Garden. And he said, well, why can't we do it in a football stadium? And so he sort of invented it on the run. You know, he made up what was then going to become the definitive grand pompous and everything else. It degenerated badly. Started off badly and degenerated, but pretty soon. But he was the guy, and what he was doing actually was, of course, exploiting all those poor girls, mostly. Boys among them, no doubt, screaming too. But, I mean, you know, the fact was he was trying to get as much money out of them because he didn't know how long the Beatles were going to last any more than the Beatles did. And what he was trying to do was cash in quick. And, well, God bless him.
Well, and Jim, it made history, but it also kind of changed or set the course for the Beatles' own history as a live music band, didn't it?
Sort of killed it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, as you were saying before, I mean, it sort of turned them off in many ways, I think. I mean, they knew they could barely be heard above the din. And, you know, I mean, that and a lot of other factors sort of drove them back into the studio and what turned out to be really kind of like a navel-gazing studio band in some sense.
Well, it was a high water mark for pop music in the mid-60s, but it might have been a low moment in the history of live sound engineering. The Beatles at Shea.
And this song will have to be our last song for tonight. Yes! And that, so. Yes, so. So, we'd like to say to everybody, thank you very much. Tonight, well, take your hand, just one, okay? And you tell lies thinking I can't see, and you can't cry 'cause you'll never let me out.
Beatles, I'm Down, August 15th, 1965, the beginning of arena rock, their first concert at Shea Stadium. Can I just say that listening to that with headphones on, that's painful. The shrieking. Oh, it's not just them. I mean, they're clearly, there is a video clip of this on our website, the soundcheck page, WNYC, and you can see John and Paul are just kind of laughing at each other because they know it's hopeless. That, you know, they can't hear each other, no one can hear them. But the screaming, it's relentless. Jim Farber of the New York Daily News is with us on the line. Nicholas Wapshot of the New York Sun with us here in the studio. Guys, this was never this place. Shea Stadium was never intended as a music venue. My personal opinion, it doesn't, you know, it's not so great as a sporting venue. How is it as the setting for live music?
Horrible. I would say it's horrible. The strange thing is that actually it's not so far away from a sort of Roman or Greek amphitheater. So you can see that actually if you position the people properly, if the Beatles were in the right place, but they were out at second base, they were miles in the distance, nobody could see them. All you could do was scream, really. And of course, this is very early, as you say, engineering. As time went on, bands changed the way that they were heard. They had enormous loudspeakers and all the rest of it. They also had great light shows. They had fireworks. They had everything else in a way to distract from the fact that the live show wasn't really it anymore. But it did provide this sort of authenticity. At least you could say, hey, I saw Pink Floyd. You know, I mean, it allowed you to say something to your pals. And then you go home and you listen to the record and you could get them clearly. So I guess, you know, you could compromise. But actually it was the sort of beginning, the end for a certain... the clarity of vision, I think, for singer-songwriters.
But there is one other element there, which is, you know, when people are going to concerts, they're also going to see each other. You know, they're mass events, they're pop events. So,
sure.
You know, yes, of course, you know, I mean, the sound is usually not the best. And even with these big video screens that they have now and things that the Beatles never would have had, it's still, you know, you're going basically to watch television, and it's kind of ridiculous on one level. And then on the other, it's this mass communal event. And there is something really exciting, particularly exciting, and I'd say uniquely exciting, when you have 50,000, 60,000, some of these places, of people together, you know, who are all loving it. You know, it's that's powerful in its own way.
All right, Jim, I want to ask you about your own experiences of concerts at Shea, but first I want to give out our phone number because we want to hear from our Soundcheck listeners. Have you ever attended a concert at Shea Stadium? If so, how was it? You have some good memories? Share them with us. If you have bad memories, we want all those gory details. You can call us at 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. Or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page of our website, wnyc.org. You can check out my blog and what some of the other New Sounds listeners are saying. And you can also see a complete list. Sorry, wrong show. New Sounds is 11. This is afternoon Soundcheck listeners. In any event, on the Soundcheck page, you'll find a complete list of the bands that have played shows at Shea Stadium. So 646-829-3985. Jim, you saw The Police in 83, The Stones in 89 at Shea Stadium. How were they?
I thought The Police were really good, actually, at that time. And actually, a funny little note about that is just, you know, on that bill was also, the second on the bill was Joan Jett, and the opening act was R.A.M., which I think is really funny.
Wow.
Back in 83. Few remember that. I mean, you know, actually, to be honest, given the kind of acoustics that are possible at a place like that, I thought The Police sounded really good, you know, with the caveat of it, you know, being in a ridiculous stadium. So, you know, I thought they came off well, and I thought The Stones came off really well, mm-hmm. you know, when they played as well. And I've seen The Stones now, I think people are used to seeing them in stadiums at this point.
Now, I'm not an acoustician, although I play one on TV, but, you know, Shea Stadium has that opening behind center field. So, you know, what is that? Where are bands placing themselves so that the sound doesn't just kind of, you know, go jettisoning out over the swamps there in Flushing Meadow?
I'm not exactly sure where they are. I think I don't remember exactly where they placed them. I'll find out again tonight because it's been so long since I've been there. It's been, I guess, since '89 is the last time I was there for a show.
But you'll be there for Billy Joel tonight.
I will be there for Billy Joel tonight. Yes.
All right. Well, The Police played one Shea show. Try saying that fast. On August 18th, 1983, it was shortly before they broke up, and the band reunited in 2007 with this live performance on the Grammys of one of their old faves. And they performed at Shea Stadium back in 1983. Jim Farber of the New York Daily News was there. He's on the line with us here in our New York studios is Nicholas Wapshot, reporter for the New York Sun. Nicholas, what does it mean for a band? I mean, they've only been a dozen, literally, over the course of 40 years. What does it mean for an artist to be invited to play at Shea Stadium?
Well, it means you've got that sort of critical mass for a start that can attract such people. And it's a very large number of people. I know that New York's a very big city, but it is an extraordinary sort of... It is a form of honor if you can actually reach that.
They're actually expecting attendance of up to 63,000 people per show for these final two concerts by Billy Joel. That's more than a World Series game, and they do that, obviously, by adding seats to the field. But so how intimate, unless you have one of those 9,000 seats on the field with the band, how intimate a concert experience are you getting?
Well, with Billy Joel, of course, it's quite difficult because he's at the piano most of the time. And the people who really mastered it and they really fueled their career on it was the Rolling Stones. Their recordings, everybody still wants to hear the early Stones recordings, and they don't much want to hear all their later albums. What they make a great deal of money out of, they've been sort of permanently on the road ever since, even though they're in their 60s now, these old gentlemen. But by building a set which goes way out into the audience, of course, and a Mick Jagger running relay races up and down, you do get a great sense of being with them. And so the Stones have done it in a way that I'm not sure that Billy Joel is going to make quite the same impression. It's not easy.
Jim?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a physically charismatic person. You know, I mean, and again, this is the thing where you're basically watching TV.
Right.
You know, you're looking at gigantic screens. So.
Well, now, you saw the Stones at Shea Stadium. Is that was that your experience of it?
Oh, I thought it was great. Yeah, I agree that the Jagger, you know, is a riveting figure, and even at this point, but, you know, if you don't look too close, keep the camera at a certain distance. But
well,
you know,
if you're at Shea Stadium, you're not going to get that close, right?
He still has that figure. No, but I mean, even with the big video screens, but he still has that figure, you know, of a younger person. So if you kind of squint, it could look like it's 30, 40 years ago. But he's physically charismatic. He's moving a lot. They do a lot of razzle dazzle. So you know, and it's incredibly upbeat material as well.
I'll just tell you that George Melly, the British jazz singer, said to Mick Jagger once, "Why are you so wrinkly?" And Jagger said, "They're laughter lines." And Melly said, "Nothing's that funny."
Brilliant.
We're talking about Shea Stadium, a grand old tradition of arena rock. It ends tonight and Friday night with two concerts by Billy Joel. Number of Soundcheck listeners on the line who've been to Shea Stadium. Joe from Bayside. Joe, what did you see at Shea? Joe, are you with us? All right. Well, it seems like we'll have to try and get back to Joe. We've been talking about the Rolling Stones. Why don't we hear a little bit of a live recording from them? They played six shows at Shea Stadium in October of 1989. And here's their song, Rockin' a Hard Place. Stones, one of about a dozen groups to have played at Shea Stadium. That all concludes this week with two concerts by Billy Joel. We'll continue in a moment with our conversation about the history of live music at Shea Stadium, and we'll take some Soundcheck listener calls as well. Coming up later on the program, Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. It was plenty controversial when it debuted 95 years ago. Now, it's getting a radical overhaul. We'll get a sneak preview later on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now on concerts at Shea Stadium over 40 years. After this season, the ballpark will close to make way for the new Citi Field next door. Now, we've been talking with New York Sun reporter Nicholas Wapshot here in our studio, New York Daily News music critic Jim Farber on the phone, about the stadium's surprising music history. Back in October of 1982, Shea hosted a remarkable generation-spanning double bill, The Who, with this band, The Clash, as their openers. This week, of course, Long Island native Billy Joel will provide the swan song for the stadium's place in rock history, with shows tonight and Friday. And let's give Joe in Bayside another shot here. Joe, you with us?
Yes, I am.
So what did you see at Shea Stadium?
Well, first of all, you're right. You really could not hear the music at all. The screaming was so loud.
Which concert?
The 65 concert.
The first Beatles event.
First Beatles event. In fact, the circumstance that that took me there was kind of ties in what you were saying about it being the first in an arena. My friends and I were hanging out on a Sunday. I was 16. We decided we were going to go to the Flushing World Fair because it was just ending. Because we had nothing else to do. We got off the train, and we looked over at Shea Stadium, and it was swarming with girls. Now, the funny thing about it is we were big Beatles fans. My friends played garage bands. They knew all the chords. They knew the harmonies. But we had no idea that there was a show going on, because we were used to rock and roll shows being in a theater, before a teenage movie. We didn't read the teen magazine, so... we didn't know. At any rate, we scalped tickets. We got in, and it was very exciting. It was a lot of fun, but we could not hear a thing.
Here's you may get a kick out of this. Ina in Morristown, New Jersey writes, I was there at Shea for the Beatles in 1965. The horrible sound I just heard on your show is the only evidence I have that those four people down there on that stage were in fact the Beatles and that they sang anything.
And you know what? I enjoyed the fact that you played "I'm Down," because my fondest memory of the show was watching John Lennon play his organ with his elbow at one point, running his elbow up and down the keyboard. But I don't remember the music. The other exciting thing was, and this might be not totally true, my friends and I swore we saw Ronnie Spector in the crowd, and it just filled our teenage lust to the top, thinking we saw her at any rate.
Okay.
Those are the two best parts of the show. In fact, one more thing. My friends went the following year in 66, and I didn't want to go. I said, I'm not going to go. I can't hear a thing. I was being like a musical snob. I didn't want to go for the Beatles. I wanted to go for Beatle music. They came back, and they said the sound was a lot better that year, so I don't know, though.
Well, I think, having done it once, you know how it is. First time's the charm. Joe, thanks very much for the call. First time, they're kind of feeling the way. Nicholas, as you said, Brian Epstein was making it up as he went along.
Absolutely.
There was no
new stuff.
So, they didn't really have the wherewithal to do an outdoor arena concert in front of 60,000 people. They just went ahead and did it.
No, but that cacophonous, rabbly noise did have a certain sort of integrity to it. There is, you may know this, there's a Walker Brothers Live in Japan record.
I didn't
know
that.
Which is very similar. But what it actually does is, talking of Ronnie Spector, it turns it into a sort of wall of sound. It's as if Phil Spector had produced it. And, it's like River Deep Mountain High. I mean, it's astonishing. Just everything is thrown in there. And so, there is something magical about it, isn't there?
Well, there certainly, I guess there must be, because bands have continued to come back. And let's see what Emil, who is driving a truck at the moment, carefully, Emil, I hope, has to say. What did you see at Shea Stadium?
Oh, I went with friends, and we saw Humble Pie and Grand Funk back in the 70s.
Wow.
What does that mean? I'm too old for this?
No. Emil, when I was a kid, growing up not far from Shea Stadium, all the older kids in my neighborhood went to that concert. They all wanted to see Grand Funk, and they all came back saying, this band, this Humble Pie, they were amazing.
That's right. I was one of the older kids. I grew up pretty close to Shea Stadium. We slept out for tickets. People were selling acid. We, of course, that's terrible, isn't it? And drank a lot and smoked a lot, and people streaked, and we had a great time. We got tickets and went back, and great concert. And like you said, introduced me to Humble Pie, and the older people, older than I, knew about Humble Pie, the ones that were deeper into rock, but we had a great time. It was just being there, part of the event.
And how was the sound? Were you able to make out what everyone was doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sound was excellent, especially for Grand Funk. I was a big Mark Farner fan, big Grand Funk fan. They were great. Humble Pie was great. Yeah, they rocked the house.
And, of course, Humble Pie featuring the soon-to-be legendary guitarist Peter Frampton.
This Without a doubt. The guy comes out in a white suit and leaves in just white pants. Yeah, he put on a hell of a show.
Emil's driving a truck there in Virginia. We're going to give you a little driving music, Emil, taking you back to Shea Stadium, 1971.
Yeah, this song This is like our generation's national anthem.
Very big back in 1971, Grand Funk Railroad, giving it a shot at, you know, trying to play the Rolling Stones classic Gimme Shelter live at Shea Stadium, 1971, and as Emil was telling us, the sound vastly improved over what happened in 1965 when the Beatles inaugurated arena rock at Shea Stadium. Jim Farber, how did Grand Funk Railroad end up playing at Shea Stadium?
They were huge at that time, and the band essentially, you know, they were kind of the power trio for the younger brothers of Cream fans, basically.
Okay.
You know, Cream had broken up, and they were, I mean, to be honest, they were like the dumbed-down version of Cream. And they were aimed at kids who were like 14, 15 at the time and all that. I mean, they were really, they're sort of two Grand Funks. I mean, this period of Grand Funk, you know, really was, you know, the power trio thing, and then they later became more of a pop band, you know, by the time of what can I think of the big hit, that, you know, the ones that Todd Rundgren produced, but they had all those pop hits, more kind of 75, 74, 75, 76,
and
we're an American band, that kind of stuff. I mean, at that time it had become almost a different band, but to answer your question, back around the time of you know, that they played that show, they really were sort of the mid-teens kind of version of Cream, and it was getting in a kind of another generation after that, the initial late 60s generation of rock fan.
And in fact, Grand Funk Railroad sold out Shea Stadium faster than the Beatles did in either 65 or 66.
That also has to do with there being a better mechanism for, you know, for getting that kind of information out. Those things are always building. You know, those things. You can never compare numbers from the past to the present away because there's so many other circumstances to change around it.
All right, let's take another call. Tema, who is joining us from Comac. Tema, what did you see at Shea?
Well, we saw the Stones, and I guess around 88 or so when they were there. I'm not sure exactly what year it was.
89.
Okay.
I've got a whole list right in front of me. October 89.
Okay. And
that list is, by the way, that list is on the soundcheck page of our website, folks. You can see all the dates of all the shows. Go ahead, Tema.
And I remember that. It was very exciting to go there. I honestly don't remember the concert. And it was just, I remember Jagger, but I can't remember the concert for no other reason. And it was just so exciting to be there. We actually have at home a ticket stub from the original Beatles concert, which I hope my husband is expecting to sell and for our retirement. And we're excited. We're going to the Billy Joel concert tonight, and I just can't wait. And I am very sad that it's the last concert, but so be it.
All right, Tema, what song would you like to hear Billy Joel sing tonight?
Oh, gosh, I can't even think. You didn't mean I'm trying to think. Oh, I don't know. I can't remember the name of it, but it was the one that was popular in 1977 or 78. It was,
I don't know. New York State of Mind or
something. No. It was kind of like a bluesy kind of song. Oh, I can't remember.
Well, Jim has a whole set list that he wants Billy Joel to play tonight. Before we get to that, Nicholas, what do you think would be appropriate for Billy Joel to wrap up Shea Stadium's musical history with?
I think he ought to sing a Beatles song, actually, and he'd be very good at it. And he's, as we know, he's very fond of the whole Beatles thing, and he's been very close to George Martin, And so I think actually a good, maybe you should sing I'm Down. That's how the Beatles ended their first set, and he could end it. It would be a thumping good end to the concert.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, that'd be great. I like the idea of him doing a Beatles song for sure, and I wouldn't be surprised if he did.
But you have put together an entire set list for Mr. Joel to play tonight. How much of it do you think he'll actually get to?
A lot. I mean, you know, he's going to play a lot of hits. I mean, he's built his career on being a fan, a crowd favorite. So, I mean, he's not going to do a whole bunch of, you know, obscure songs, although I'm sure he'll put some in there because it's going to be a pretty long set. I mean,
yeah.
I think he's going from between 2 and 2.5 hours.
All right, well, tonight and Friday night, Shea Stadium's music history comes to an end with music by this guy, Billy Joel. You're hearing him in the background. You can read Jim Farber's ultimate set list for Billy Joel's concerts on the soundcheck page of our website. Also, Nicholas Wapshot's article on Billy Joel and Shea Stadium. You can see video of the Beatles' 1965 concert there, and listener comments in the blog as well. The conversation continues online. Check out the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Nicholas, Jim, thank you both for being with us.
Great
been
pleasure.
A lot of fun.
Great pleasure.
Thank
Thanks.
You.
Still to come on Soundcheck today, a composer and conductor talk about remixing Stravinsky's groundbreaking work, Rite of Spring. And coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll look at the performance of another challenging work, one that required 4 helicopters. We'll find out how that got off the ground. Who wrote this? How that got off the ground. That's tomorrow on Soundcheck.
I need a little give and take.